It's time for Power Hour.
I love your energy that you bring every day.
The IrishSportsDaily.com podcast covering the Fighting Irish throughout the year.
You know why I love it? Because you love football.
Visit IrishSportsDaily.com now to sign up for a premium subscription.
This is a football family.
And now, your Power Hour host.
The guy has a lot of ability.
Mike Frank.
Welcome once again, everybody, to Irish Sports Daily Power Hour. I'm your host, Mike Frank. I'm here with my new co-host here, and Bob Kamel. Bob, first of all, it was great having you last week. It was we got a lot of really good positive response. People were really excited to have you on the show, and you did a fantastic job. So I wanted to say thanks again for coming on, and everybody really loved what you had to say.
I appreciate it, Mike, and I appreciate the positive comments from the people. I had a chance to read some of them, and it means a lot to me. You know, sometimes after you've been gone for a while, you know, people say, "Hey, are you Bob Kamel?" And I go, "Well, I used to be." So, but it was good, and it's good. It's really a lot of fun, and you know, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to, you know, getting into the completion of spring recruiting and doing a little talk about that, and then into the summer and then into the season.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I think I can't wait to get your thoughts on the season, you know, once we get rolling. But, you know, there's Irish Invasion. We're going to talk a lot about recruiting today. But, you know, things have changed a lot since you were in, and it's really become a crazy business compared to when you and I first, well, not you started, but when I first started, you know, 23 years ago when we first formed a relationship. Right. I'm telling you, it's changed a tremendous amount.
Well, Mike, it all comes down to technology, and that's what's accelerated the recruiting process. Years ago, May recruiting, which was called an evaluation period, was actually an evaluation period because there was the film was 16-millimeter film.
Sure.
Even those cans like that, if you showed that to a young guy now, he'd probably think it was a discus. So what college coaches had to do was actually leave campus for purpose of evaluation and go look at juniors, because to reproduce one of those 16-millimeter films was like $250. So the coaches had to keep them in their office, because if, say, one coach went in and wanted to take it back to campus and then another coach came in the next day and wanted to look at the film, it wouldn't be there. So what would happen is you'd go to a high school. There were certain high schools that you knew that when you went to them, they would have a place for you to watch film, a place where they would actually have really good film. And you'd go in the room, and there might be 10, 15 college coaches in there, just all sitting around looking basically at the same film. Well, then the next technology, or the next advanced technology, came to VHS.
Sure.
Okay, and the VHS made things a bit more portable, but even still, they had to be copied. And high school coaches could copy 10, 15, maybe at the most 20. I don't remember any more than that, and then send them out to various schools. So even that kind of, it accelerated the process, but it still limited the process when it came down to the DVD. Because now you have all these avenues, so to speak. A college coach could literally go in his office, put his computer on, and evaluate hundreds of recruits actually in his own office, and then determine which ones he was going to visit.
Sure.
The also accelerating part of that was freshmen and sophomores could have their DVD online, so you could actually track guys. And when you eventually went out to May recruiting, the bigger schools aren't really going there to evaluate people. Maybe here and there. They're going there almost as sending a message, hey, I stopped at your school because I want you to know how interested we are in you. Now, the other division, the other levels, it's still somewhat of an evaluation process. As I mentioned to you, I spoke at a combine yesterday in the Chicago area, in Elmhurst, actually, and there were a number of college coaches there looking at evaluating young guys, but most of them were Division II and Division III coaches.
Sure, sure. Well, and that's what it comes down to. You know, this whole thing has changed so much compared to, I remember when I would be out just trying to get kids to send me film, you know, and that was difficult, even though they had the VHS, and it was because you know, the high school coaches or the college coaches wanted their film. Plus, everybody like me was competing to try and get that film. And so it was difficult. And when you finally got one, there was some pretty amazing, you know, films that were out there. And you'd be like, wow, that's pretty impressive. So it really has come a long way. Now you have Huddle, where basically they sell a service where you can just pull up and watch anybody you want. And so it really has changed a lot. Bob, I wanted to, you know, kind of get into some stuff with you about recruiting because you spent a lot of time doing it. You know, I think a lot of people want to know the answer to this question. And I, again, I think it's probably changed a little bit from when you were doing it. But how hard is it to recruit for Notre Dame? Because, you know, academics and environment and all this type of stuff. And I keep trying to tell people I don't think they fathom, you know, what it's like for, say, an African-American kid to come to Notre Dame and be on campus and not see a lot of the people like him, you know, and that's a big thing for a lot of people. You know, it's a different environment. And, you know, how do you overcome all those things that have you know, been objections in the past?
How long is the show?
Yeah, I know. It's very true.
Well, Mike, I'll tell you this. Recruiting at Notre Dame, or anywhere, I shouldn't say anywhere else. Let me give a disclaimer to that statement. Recruiting at Notre Dame to me came down to hard work, enthusiasm, and a passion for Notre Dame. And I could tell when we hired a new coach whether he had a passion for Notre Dame. And because that's something that if it's a false passion or if you're a salesman, parents see right through that. You have to emphasize all the great things about Notre Dame and not talk negatively about the other schools. What I would do is when we hired a new coach, I would have him go over to the alumni office, and they have a magnificent tape about Notre Dame. It's about a 20-minute deal. And if any of you parents are ever on campus, go to the Alumni Center. They'll play this thing for you. And it really, just the idea of where Notre Dame came from, what Notre Dame was about, Father Hesburgh, Father Joyce, I mean, on and on, all the way back to the early days. And as soon as that tape was over, they would be met by students who are very well versed in Notre Dame lore and the campus. And I would have them go on that tour just to learn as much as they could about Notre Dame. Probably one of the coaches that I thought got the most out of that was Urban Meyer. I went with him. I walked on campus with him, and just the little nuances that these people know, and then gather all that information, and then add your own passion, your own hard work, your enthusiasm, and then fall in love with Notre Dame, and then go out and recruit Notre Dame. Some coaches were able to do that, others weren't. If you came to Notre Dame with my heart of hearts and it was a job, you came to the wrong place. And it was evident to me early on with some of the coaches we hired, this guy will be okay, but this guy here, a guy like, as I mentioned, Urban was ensconced in the things that went around at Notre Dame, as were others. Dave Roberts was the same way. Another guy, Earl Moseley, who I think is one of the most underrated assistant coaches that I've ever been around. I mean, we would walk from Mass to the stadium on game day, and guy Mose would be all teared up every week. But he loved the place, and that's why he was so successful in the way he coached. And so you take that out into the recruiting arena. The hard part right now, Mike, is this. I would say early offers. A while back, not too distant past, people really weren't offering people as early. Now, if Notre Dame wants to keep up, they have to find the combination of the academics, the social life, the campus life, and then combine it with going out and making sure that you're on the right people. Because, and I hope I can get this phenomenon, what I'm trying to say is that any other school that goes out and early offers, that's fine. And because they're all alike. In a lot of ways, I should say, they're all alike.
Sure.
But we're different. Mm-hmm. So you have to do it differently. But in order to compete, you know, you have to do these things. When I was here, we could not offer an individual until he came to campus, until he met with admissions, and then on Saturday we would have a huge admissions talk to the young people and their parents, and then from there they would break down by what school they wanted to get into, whether it be business, flat, whatever it might be. And this is the way the system worked. And then at the end of that period, they went on for the rest of the tour on that Saturday lunch, meeting players, the stadium and all that. While that was going on, the admissions director and the head of student services for academics and the people in the individual schools met. They actually met and went over each individual as to how they felt this individual's ability to succeed at Notre Dame would happen. And then while we were out, they would form a report and send it back to the football office. And that was always interesting.
Yeah.
And I would go through it with the head coach and the assistant coaches, and it would be a prediction as to the amount of success that these people felt that the individual could have here. And from that, we were able to offer. Well, I don't know if that would work right now.
No, you wouldn't get very far with that
no,
kind of system.
No, and I mean, but what's happening now is, and I understand it, they're actually offering young guys that really haven't been to campus.
Yeah.
And I think what that does, and it has to be done, I think what that does, and what enters into the picture with that, if I may, more of a failure possibility than prior to when we had to have them on campus before we could offer them.
It's interesting you mention that. And you know, obviously, doing my job, you hear a lot of stuff about what happens and the process and things. And it's been one of my issues for a long time in saying, why aren't they offering people? And again, it's because of the process you talk to. Now it's more streamlined and they get some more leeway. But it's more about having the right person than necessarily the right grades at this point. And obviously they can't get in unless they have the right grades. But you know, they want to know that if they're recruiting somebody, they don't get stuck in a situation, well, this guy's got a 3.5. You know, he's got a 23 on his ACT. But he's a bad guy, you know, and that can happen. I'm sure you've run into some guys like that.
Well, that's up to the coach that's recruiting the area.
Sure.
I mean, you have to go in there and do your due diligence.
Yeah.
Go to the counseling office. Maybe grab a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to people in the community, on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Because the one thing you don't want to bring someone here that's going to detract from the great tradition, you know, and maybe get in trouble or maybe get thrown out of school for that matter. I have a really funny story that kind of popped in my mind. Talking about an assistant coach not doing his due diligence. We had an assistant coach when I coached here, and he left to go to another school. And I picked up some of his recruits. Was responsible for some of his recruits. And I went out to, this really is funny, I went out to the airport, and I met this young man, an outstanding running back from the northeast part of the country. And it was a cold day, but it was a pretty... sky was blue, and I was so excited. And a young man got in the car, and we came down Cleveland, Bendix to Cleveland. And I said, look, if you look off in the distance, you're going to see that dome. Isn't it gorgeous? And the young man looked at me, and he said, I didn't know you have a dome stadium here. Well, right then and there, I probably could have made a U-turn. And all I could think about was the guy who was recruiting him. What did you do?
Yeah, did you talk to this guy?
Did you talk to this guy? I didn't know you had a dome stadium. Well, it's not really the dome I'm talking about, but you'll see it. So it's more difficult to that extent. And, you know, and the more guys you recruit, the more guys you have on that board, probably the more chances you have to make mistakes.
Yeah. Well, I think it, you know, back to, I guess my point was, where they run into trouble, you know, based off of things that I've been told, is what you never want to do, and you know this, is you never want to offer a kid and then back off later, because then the head coach, the high school coach, gets very angry at you. You're like, wait a minute, you said that my guy had a spot, and now all of a sudden you're taking it away. So that, I think, is part of the problem why Notre Dame doesn't get out there and get aggressive with some of the offers. But at the same time, Stanford, what they've done, and their process is far more involved, really.
Yes. Yeah.
And what Stanford has done is they've basically put the offer in a two-term category, meaning we're offering you as a player. Okay, we think you're a fantastic player. We want you. We think you're going to be here. But we have this process. This process is, you know, you have to qualify. You have to you know, go through and fill out all your essays and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we can't tell you absolutely you can get into school here because you haven't gone through that process. But as an athlete, we absolutely love you. We're going to recruit the heck out of you. We think you're great. You know, we'll keep you informed about the process and make sure that we can get you into school and help you do that. But, you know, we can't guarantee that we can get you into school. That's how Stanford does it. And I'll be honest, I think that's all Notre Dame needs to do to get in the race for some of these kids. It's when they linger, and, you know, we talked about this on the recruiting show on Thursday. There are a lot of kids already who've been to Penn State, who've been to Michigan, who've been to Ohio State, 2019 kids. And, Bob, you know how hard it is. It's basically, you know, you only have so much money. I mean, for these parents, you know, when they can't, you know, come on an official visit, it's like taking, you know, 8 vacations that you have to spend money on. So, you know, as a recruiting guy, you got to get them in early in order to have a chance. And so that, I think, is kind of what slowed the process down for Notre Dame, and they're just going to have to figure out a way to overcome it.
Mike, you bring up two great points. One, the admissions process based upon when you come to campus. So I think that's Stanford does that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that to an extent. Perhaps they do it, you know, Mike Elston and David Polokwin, perhaps they do that now. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that to a family. You know, we are offering you based upon your admissibility, okay? Now, here's what happens with that. Some families will take that as an insult and say, well, wait a second. School A, School B, and School C say he's offered no matter what right now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to run into a problem there. What happens also in that process, if there is a strong person in the process on the recruit's side, and someone that really understands what Notre Dame could mean to somebody, they can overcome that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's not willing to do that. I think it's probably a red flag as to whether they should come to Notre Dame or not.
Sure. And I think that that's interesting because, you know, I think that there, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this. I think that there's in a class, right, I think that you have your core class of about 75% of your recruits are guys that just really want to be at Notre Dame. You know, they really want to be here. They're very excited about the opportunity. And I think there's this 25% of guys, and they're usually the very best players in the class. Not always, but a lot of times they're the very best players. And I don't want to say you have to talk them into it. I think what you have to do is overcome their objections about it. And in order to do that, you know, you have to get in the race and make sure that you're punching all the right buttons and you're saying all the right things. And it's how do you massage that 25% that makes your difference of whether you're a top 20 class, you're a top 10, you're a top 5, or even some number one classes that we've seen in the past that you were a part of and other people. Now, I think that it's that 25% and the objections that you run into, and how do you do that? Now, you mentioned it. That's a very good point about some people take that as a slight. Well, these guys think I can get into school.
Not only some people, Mike. Yeah. If you're recruiting against Notre Dame and you're sitting and talking to the individual, to his family, and saying, well, wait a second now. You have to do what with Notre Dame? Why don't they think you're qualified? Don't they think you're a good student?
Mm-hmm.
You know, on and on. So the negative recruiting comes out in that situation also. So that's another thing that you have to go up against. But again, strong person in the family, someone who loves education, someone who understands the impact of a Notre Dame degree, you've got a chance. And I used to always tell coaches, especially when the younger coaches came around, find a friend. Find a friend in the process. There may be the principal of the school may be a Notre Dame fan. The principal of a school may be a Notre Dame graduate. Perhaps there, you know, someone in that person's life, as you speak to that person, oh, my uncle just loves Notre Dame. Oh, he does. Can I get his phone number? I mean, you know, and find a friend and someone that can cultivate the relationship while you're not around. I will say this, okay. The recruiting process at Notre Dame, when I was here with the admissions department, with Mr. Rooney and with Dan Saraceno, was fair. Very, very fair. You knew exactly what you were getting into. They were fair. If you brought a young man in who may be a little bit borderline and they met with him and he came in and presented himself well and let those individuals know, I want to be here. This is the school I want to come to. You would catch a break. And I thought, Dan Saraceno, I loved Dan Saraceno. I loved dealing with him. Again, I thought he was very fair. He was a Notre Dame graduate. He actually ran track at Notre Dame, was in the monogram club at Notre Dame. But, you know, at the same time, you know, for lack of a better way to put it, Dan and Mr. Rooney, when I was here, they're basically keepers of the gate. They have a huge, huge obligation and a huge responsibility to make sure that the integrity of Notre Dame is never compensated by anybody.
Mm-hmm. It's very true, and that was one question I wanted to ask you, and maybe you don't want to answer it, but, you know, towards the end of the Holtz era, you know, there was rumors that maybe they started to tighten up on some of those admission standards.
No.
Yeah, and that was a rumor that was going around, and
no.
I'd always heard Saraceno was very fair. As long as you did your due diligence and made his job easy, meaning you weren't trying to, you know, slide one past the goalie,
no.
And they were legit people, he was very, very fair with you.
Well, he was, but the one thing for me, and again, this I don't want to talk about me. I want to talk about a place I love and
sure.
and how it functions, but I'll tell you this. I waited 40 years to come to Notre Dame, and when I came here, my deal was I was going to be in lockstep with the admissions office. I would never, ever want to take an athlete, again, that would compensate the integrity and not represent Notre Dame very well. And I think Dan knew that. And I think Mr. Rooney knew that. Because even the first time I met with Mr. Rooney, I had warnings like, you couldn't believe, wait till you get into this office and see this guy. I had no problem with him. He was very fair. And I understood, again, the responsibility that these people had. I would never, ever consider bringing somebody here. Now, I can't say that every assistant coach, when he went on the road, did his due diligence.
Sure.
Because gosh knows we had a couple guys that, you know, in fact, should never have been brought on a recruiting visit. And thank goodness they didn't end up here, because who knows what that would have turned into. But I think if you show Notre Dame and the Notre Dame administration that this is important to you, they're going to meet you halfway, and you're going to be able to bring some guys in here. And you know what? I don't think we lost the guy to an academic impropriety. As I think about it now, if a young guy comes here, goes to class, uses the academic support office, he's going to succeed here. Is it easy? No, it's not easy. You know, when I will tell you, Autry Denson. Everybody has AD stories, but Autry Denson. The one thing with him was. You know, I don't want to say he was borderline, but he, not a stretch, but, you know, he was a guy that came in here and you knew he was going to be special right out the gate. Was he academically prepared initially? Not bad, not great, okay? But when he came here, one morning we had a 6 a.m. workout, and I got to the facility at 5:30. And as I walked in, Autry Denson was sleeping on the floor with a blanket and a pillow and books spread out all around him. And I went up to him and I gave him a shake. I said, "Hey, D, what are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, coach," he said, I've got a tough exam this morning and we've got this workout. I studied all night. I knew that if I went to bed in my dorm room, I might not make the workout and I still had more studying to do. So I just came here and studied here and then slept on the floor." Autry Denson,
yeah.
And you talk about an exemplary person for the University of Notre Dame, and now representing Notre Dame as a coach, that is one of the most phenomenal stories of a young guy. I mean, how many guys would do that? But that was part of his makeup, and his mom, she made sure that he understood all the obligations and duties that he had while he was here.
Sure. You mentioned AD, and I'm telling you, Coach, I've been around a lot of coaches. I've been around a lot of people. He's probably, I would say, singularly the most impressive person I've ever been around.
I mean,
just amazing. He really is. I've never seen a more confident, positive person in my life. He is the most positive, confident person, and it's just, I can see why he's so successful. He is going to be a dynamite head coach someday.
He'll hire me. I will tell you this. He's a phenomenal husband and a phenomenal dad, and he has strong, strong religious convictions.
Sure.
AD, I hope you're not listening to this because I'm going to tell this story on you. Coach Holtz grabbed me one day, and he said, "Bob, go find Autry." And I was kind of like, what happened to my guy? And he said, bring him to the office here. I need to talk to him. So I went up on campus. I checked where his class was. And I said, hey, D, the old man wants to see you. And he said, why? I said, I don't know. He said, I'm a little bit scared. I said, so am I. I said, but we're going to go in the office. So we came back to the football office and went into Coach Holtz's office. And Coach Holtz said, Bob, close the door, but stick around for this meeting I'm going to have with Autry. And he said, Autry, you are a great, great runner. You're a great runner. And I was like, all right, you know, we got this guy, Autry Denson. Autry's all, Coach, thank you, thank you. But you are not a very good running back. So the air went out of that balloon immediately, and I'm thinking, where is this going? And he said, now, Autry, if you went back to play from one of those schools in Florida, you could get away with being a great runner. It'll hand you the ball, and they'll run the ball, but that's not what I'm looking for in a running back. I want a guy that's going to block. I want a guy that's going to run good routes out of the backfield. I want a guy that's going to pick up blitzes. And if you want to stay here, you have to do those things. You probably know. You probably want to just go back, I don't know, Florida State, Miami. Those are probably better places for you. And he said, I have a list of the head coaches here and their phone numbers. Which one do you want me to call? And I'm like sitting in there going, I can't believe what I'm hearing. And Autry's like, Coach, he said, you know, I think Bobby Bowden's the guy for you. So he takes Coach Holtz goes to grab the phone. And he said, here's Bobby Bowden's number. He said, I'll call him and, you know, you'll be all set. And Autry gets up and he puts his hand on Coach Holtz's hand by the phone. He said, Coach Holtz, no, I want to stay here. And he said, come on, Autry, you don't want to do all block, pick up blitzes, come on. He said, no, Coach, I'll do all those things. Don't call anybody. Coach said, well, okay, Autry, but I'm going to leave these numbers next to my phone. And Autry got up and he said, Coach, I'll do all those things. And he shot out the door. And Coach Holtz gave me a little wink. I thought to myself, this guy might end up being the leading rusher in the history of Notre Dame, and we're going to send him down to see Bobby Bowden.
Yeah.
But talk about a psychologist. But that's one moment in Autry's life that when we get together, we still talk about.
Now, Bob, you were heavily, actively involved in kids today, too. You're still very much involved in the recruiting process. We've talked a little bit about what you do now as a profession. You know, you've helped kids get scholarships, and so you're around today's youth. Do you think kids have changed, you know, from when you were actually coaching? Do you see a lot of change? You know, I would like to get your opinion on that.
Mike, I can take this back to like 1972, 1973, when I was an assistant football coach at Fenwick High School. The iconic Anthony R. Lawless in the Catholic League was our athletic director, and a lot of ways my very first mentor. And I was very upset with a young man one day, and Coach Lawless called me in, and he said, Bob, he said, I know you're angry about this situation with this young man, but he said, remember one thing, kids haven't changed. The people that handle them have changed. And I don't think I take that right up to yesterday, the things that I saw. So I think that any time there's a parent, whether it be a foster parent, an aunt, an uncle, a grandmother, a grandfather, that's a strong person in the individual's life that really wants the individual to be the right kind of person, there probably isn't too much change. But when I pick up the newspaper, or even with all due respect to your publication, and I see extensive quotes by 15 and 16-year-olds in the paper sitting in judgment of schools, of coaches, of situations that they've encountered at schools. Well, you know, Ron Paulus's parents didn't do this. Karen Jackson, Jerry's mom, she didn't do this. They would never have permitted their sons to go out and say the things that they and hold people in judgment whose livelihoods are based upon whether it's successful to recruit these people or not. So I think if there's a strong person in an individual's life that keeps the individual grounded, it's a huge difference. But I see less of that right now. And it angers me, whether it's social media, whatever it might be, just you know, son, what are you doing? Why are you saying these things? Enjoy the process. It's an honor for you. You don't have to go through all of these shenanigans that you're going through to pick the right school. So my answer to you, Mike, is if there's a strong person in an individual's life, I don't think kids have changed. I think they've stayed the same. Young people have stayed the same for the better. But at the same time, when people just let kids freelance this way and let them act that way and do the things they do that way, it's like, you know, I've picked School A as one of my 14 schools that I'm still interested in.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. I want to get your thoughts.
Mike, look, wait a second now. Just please, Mike.
Yeah, sure.
That hat deal at the All-American game.
I was just going to ask you that. I was just going to ask you about what went through your head as coaches the first time you heard about this kid's calling a press conference to announce he's going to have hats. You know, I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Oh, Mike. Mike, I actually did that game a number of times for TV and radio, and I've been down there. And more, when the young guy goes up to the table to select the hat, the entourage gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And you know what those people are? Enablers.
Yeah, yeah.
They're enablers. They're riding on the success this young man's had. They're riding on his publicity. Mm. They all stand there. The one that really bothered me one time, and I happened to be standing by the table there where the hats were, a young man had committed to a school, and they have an individual there who puts the hats on the table, and they're segregated by individual, like, you know, player A, all the hats that he has, and they're wound up in a deal like that. Well, they put all the hats on the table as they were preparing to go on the air. The school that he committed to already, that hat was on the table. And when he approached the table, I couldn't believe my eyes, he took that hat and threw it under the table. And he had committed to the school already and had these other hats out there and then picked up a hat from another school. Now, you imagine you're an assistant coach or a head coach, and you're watching this, and the kid's committed to us already, and he walks up to the table, and our hat isn't even on the table.
Yeah, yeah.
The hat deal doesn't sit well with me.
It never has sat well with me. And I tell you, you know, and again, I think you bring up a valid point. My dad would punch me in the face before he'd let me do so. And I'm just being honest. He would have hated me doing that.
Well,
he would have been
what I'm talking
so
about.
Disappointed in me.
Mike,
if
that's
I
exactly what I'm talking
like,
about. Like a strong individual in the home,
yeah.
You know, that knows how to raise a son.
Yeah, and my dad would look at it as a very disrespectful thing to a lot of people who spent a lot of time trying to get you to come to their school and were honest and nice and, you know. So I totally understand. Now, Bob, I do want to ask you about this because we've seen Stanford and Notre Dame, you know, become a lot more competitive on the field and in recruiting. Notre Dame recently had, you know, the issues with the Frozen Five, guys getting kicked out of school for academics. We just had Alize Mack, you know, suspended for the entire year. We've had guys recently, a number of them, have this, you know, academic issue. And because of that, I think that's really kind of hurt Notre Dame in recruiting because, you know, Stanford can say, look, if you can get in here, our guys, we never have this problem. I don't know what's going on at Notre Dame, but we never have this problem. You get in here, we get you through, you get graduated, you don't have to worry about your career. You know, Everett Golson's another fine example. All these things continue to happen, and I think that's really put a big struggle for Notre Dame in trying to compete with Stanford. And I think that's why they're losing that as well as losing on the field. That's why they're losing some of those people. Can you talk about, I guess, the impact of that and what that would be like in trying to overcome that? And what can Notre Dame do? And then finally, you know, I think Brian Kelly's taken a lot of heat for this. But I'm not really sure it's Brian Kelly's fault. I mean, Notre Dame has academic support. Now, this is something you mentioned you wanted to talk about with the assistant coaches and how it's important. So I'm going to give you the floor and just do what Bob Kamel does.
Well, Mike, first of all, Everett Golson's situation broke my heart and angered me to no end. I mean, it really did. This is the quarterback at Notre Dame. The quarterback at Notre Dame, the face of the football program next to the head football coach. It should have never, ever, ever happened. So somebody said, well, it was an impropriety about, and I don't, I don't want to extend myself to the point that I'm so knows factually about what the impropriety was, because I don't know, and nor should I know. But the fact is, if he was not 100% prepared to take that test that caused this, I put it on the academic support office. Okay. Now, I'm going to digress a bit here. The first layer of academic support is with the assistant football coach. The assistant football coach has to be the first academic advisor that the individual has. We had a meeting every Tuesday, I think it was, at 11 a.m. The head coach would open up a book, and the book was, it was a binder, and it was broken down by position. So tight ends, Coach Holtz opens the book. Bob, Pete had an econ test last week. How did he do? Bob, Pete had an academic meeting with Dr. Kate Hlischak. Did he show up? Bob, Leon has dropped the class. What class has he added? He had all that information in front of him, everything. Dr. Kate Hlischak, who was the head of academic support at that time, she would come in, and I know he wasn't crazy about all those meetings. But the fact is, when he came into that meeting, he was totally prepared about each and every individual. And then the onus now went on the head on the assistant coach. Well, Coach, I think I talked to Pete. You got to be on that. Are you sure? Yes, sir. Leon dropped Econ 201, and I'm being hypothetical. He picked up Econ 204. Okay. Then to the running back coach. And we'd sit in that meeting, and I'll be real honest with you. You're nervous. I mean, because you had better know all about your guys. But it really emphasized the importance of the relationship with the assistant coach to the individual that you know, that you were dealing with at your position. The second layer, as I see it, is the academic office. I can't speak about the academic support office at Notre Dame. I can speak to the academic support office that was here when I was here.
Sure.
And that was Dr. Kate Hlischak. She was phenomenal. And then we had Sister Catherine, who was a nun, I think a Dominican nun possibly. And between the two of them, they had what they called a red list. And a red list were young guys that may have come here as freshmen and were an academic stretch, or they were on the red list, were guys that were here and not doing what they were supposed to do. They put those guys in an academic phone booth. I mean, I remember Sister Catherine standing outside the locker room and saying, Bob, I need to see him, him, and him. Sister, I don't care about your meeting. My meeting's more important, because if they don't succeed at my meeting, they're not going to end up at your meeting. And you would go up there. I used to take, when I first came here, Leon never went up there himself. Mm-hmm. I went with him. I wanted to be all over it. So between the combination head coach to the assistant coach to the academic support people, and my hat is off to everybody that worked in that academic support office at that time. Now, at times it was difficult. I mean, I remember Kate Hlischak saying, hey, when he gets on the airplane, you guys are flying to USC, make sure he gets all of this done, Coach. That type of a hands-on type of thing. It was never corporate. It was family. If you remember the story that Sister Catherine called Rocket when he was, I think, in Canadian Football League, mm-hmm. and said, hey, when are you going to come back and finish? And Rocket said something to the effect, you know, I'm a professional athlete right now. She said, I don't care. I promised your mom you would graduate. You're coming back here, and these are the classes you're going to take. Well, that's the kind of hands-on. That's what I would like to see. And I don't know where the system failed Everett. But the Notre Dame, the quarterback, now people are going to write and say, you know what, these guys got to grow up. There comes a point in time. But you know what, I heard a great professor, president of the University of New Orleans, who I heard speak as a matter of fact, it was an NAACP meeting in Ypsilanti, Michigan. I'll never forget this man as long as I live. He was one of the most impressive educators I've ever met. And he pointed out to the audience and he said, many of you are educators, and I want you to understand something. Every flower does not blossom on the first day of spring. So in other words, just to say, well, he's a sophomore, he can handle this. No, Maybe he can't. Maybe he's a freshman and he can, but maybe this other individual, you can't paint this with a broad brush. He's not ready for it. It's like teaching somebody how to swim, is my analogy. The worst thing you could do is throw them right in the water if they don't know how to swim.
Sure.
They're going to be afraid of the water for the rest of their life. So what do? You stand there and you hold them up. They kick their feet a little bit. They move their arms a little bit. Then when you can kind of feel they're floating and they can swim, all right, now you take your hands off and they're on their way. But that doesn't happen with everybody. So don't tell me, you know, he's 20 years old. He needs to do this. Maybe his background is not such as somebody maybe coming from St. Ignatius High School in Cleveland or Fenwick in Oak Park, for that matter. Maybe where he came from academically, he's going to need more hands-on support than somebody else. And so what? And so what? Because eventually the light will go on and he'll walk across the stage like some of these young people did yesterday, a Notre Dame graduate.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I talked to a couple players that were here after you were gone. One kid was dyslexic. They had no idea. I mean, how could a kid be in high school, going into college, and dyslexic? Couldn't even read because he just couldn't read.
At Notre Dame?
Yes.
No,
I swear to God, kid flat told me this. So, and it's not that Notre Dame couldn't figure it out. It's just he'd been pushed through school for so long, there was no way for Notre Dame to figure it out. You know, he just had been pushed through school. Now, wow. It was a school that is known for doing that. Let's just put it that way. A school out west that is known for doing that. So it did not shock me. And he did not last here either. And you know, so I think Notre Dame's learned some things along the way. I think you bring an... I think my theory on this is it's twofold. You know, I've heard flat. There were some guys that GAs literally had to get up and go to their apartment or go to their dorm and physically walk them to school so they actually showed up in class. And I think that this is an example of what you're talking about as a strong individual, because I think, you know, if say I was a kid and I was committed to Coach Holtz and I was a running back or whatever, you know, whatever it may be, Coach Holtz or my position coach could call my dad and say, Mike's not doing this. And I guarantee you my dad would take care of that in 5 seconds. And I think is the difference in today's kids a lot of times is they don't have that dad that's going to do that. What they have is a dad who makes the excuse or the mom that makes the excuse or the foster parent or the aunt or whoever's in charge. And I think that that's been kind of some of the problems that they've had. And it's how do you balance that?
Well, let me, again, yeah. Another disclaimer. I don't know how the academic support office works at Notre Dame now. It may be different than when I was here. Maybe the system's different. So I have no axe to grind with the academic support office. But I will tell you that I was very, very disappointed in the situation with Everett Golson. Very disappointed.
It was to have that and then the very next year to have Frozen Five right after that, followed by Alize Mack, who's another elite guy the very next year. I mean, that's just three really bad black eyes for Notre Dame.
And it's fodder for negative recruiting.
Absolutely, and that's what I'm saying. They're using Stanford would be using that. They'd be foolish not to use that. And that's not even, guys like, I'm not going to say names, but a lot of schools out there would say, look, here's a way you can look at this. You know, you can still get a good education here if you come here. If you apply yourself, you can still get a good education here. The difference is you're not going to be kicked off the football team. We'll make sure you get through. Everybody gets through. And that's something that's tough to overcome. And that I think is what's really hurt Notre Dame.
Well, Mike, let me take this a step further. First of all, I am an advocate for ladies sports like you can't believe. I have three daughters, college graduates, two of whom sports at the collegiate level. So I'm all in for all sports being taken care of from the academic support office, whether it be the ladies rowing team or the men's football team, whether it be the ladies basketball team or the ladies softball team, all of them. I want them all to come here. I want them all to have success because each and every one of them is an integral part of the culture that we have here at Notre Dame. But bottom line, and I know people don't want to hear this, take care of the people that pay the bills.
Yeah.
And who I'm talking about is football. And if you have to increase the academic support for football to make sure football is successful, well, then so be it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be realistic about this. I mean, you really do. The football team is the face of the athletic program here at Notre Dame. And again, not taking anything away from these other sports. Please, I want everybody to understand that. But take care of the people that pay the bills. And I'm not talking about taking exams for them or whatever, but increasing the manpower or person power, if you will, with the academic support for football.
Yeah, it makes the most sense, especially when you've had problems. And let's hope that they get through this year without any more problems.
That was going to be the first thing when you asked about, and I talked about, well, spring evaluation's almost over, spring football's over, we go into the summer. My goal for the school I love is no off-field improprieties, zero, zero, none. Let's hit the street running in that opening game.
Well, and the sad thing is right now that's when the test scores and the semester grades are coming out right about now, so they know what's going on. Now, you can fix some problems in the summer, but at the same time, you got to make sure that they're fixed. So I haven't heard anything, and I don't want to, I don't want people to take that as some sort of inside information that I'm hinting towards, because that's not what I'm doing at all. But now is kind of a scary time for coaches because some guys are probably borderline. That's just – it happens every year where there's guys that are borderline, and you got to get them refocused and get them ready to go. And summer class, while usually tends to be a little bit easier, is also a bigger pain in the rear end for students as well. They don't like it as much, because they'd rather be out on the beach or doing whatever. So.
But the one thing with summer classes, Mike, if you could take summer classes so that when you're in season – that your load is not as stringent.
Yeah.
Your academic load, it's a neat time. Summer school is a neat time to be on campus. And it's a great time for assistant coaches. Guys come by the office and, you're not under any time constraints. Mm-hmm. How's your mom and dad doing? How's your aunt doing? I heard your sister just graduated from IU or whatever, and get to know each other a little better and, have a can of pop, sit in the office, maybe talk a little football. I loved it. I loved the summertime on campus.
Yeah. Well, and I learned real early, take your hard classes in the summer. Because one, you had to be there, otherwise you were failing. So if you were there, you're automatic getting a C if you're there, at least when I went to school. I mean, you certainly had to do work, but they just appreciated you being there and showing a commitment to actually succeeding.
There's not a word in the English language called decommit. And recently I'm putting a line through a phrase called summer job.
Yeah. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, that's getting to be an interesting thing as well. Now, Bob, last year, I really felt like the reason Notre Dame lost so many games was lack of leadership. I think it was from the top down. I think Brian Kelly has admitted he didn't do a good job. I think when you look at his responsibilities of what he should have done, i.e., probably address Brian Van Gorder, probably address Paul Longo, other positions. So I think leadership there didn't happen. But I also think team chemistry and leadership amongst the team is very, very important. More important than a lot of people think. You've been around a lot of great teams. You've been around some that maybe weren't quite as good. And I'm sure you've been around teams that you felt maybe should have been better, but just didn't have the proper leadership. I wanted to get your thoughts on that. Can you think about those things and give me your thoughts?
Well, Mike, I'm glad you mentioned that Coach Kelly admitted to that. And as I mentioned last week, there are a lot of people that probably wouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
My hat is off to him for admitting that, some of the things he should have been more hands-on. And I also used a term last week called so above, so below. The pack travels at the speed of the lead wolf.
Mm-hmm.
So that message kind of goes through the entire program. One thing I really believe is your quarterback, you have to, you can't anoint or appoint leadership, but the quarterback has to be a young man who's totally immersed in the program in every way, shape, or form. And his leadership, because he will spend more time with his peers than any of the coaches will. And the person after that, that really is an intricate part of the chemistry of the football team, is the strength and conditioning staff. They are with the players, especially in the summertime, much, much more than any assistant coaches or head coaches, and probably because of NCAA rules. When I think about the combination, I think, again, all right, so everybody can say, oh, coach loves Jarius. Yeah, I do love Jarius. He's like my son. But when they slacked off that in the summer one year, he got the team together and he said, you older guys that have cars, you make sure you help the younger guys. We're going to the Lake Michigan. Don't bring your bathing suits. Bring your running shoes. And we're going to run that, I forget, the Mount Baldy or whatever it was.
The dunes, yeah.
The dune. We're going to run the dunes until you guys drop, because this past week has been horrendous. And they got there, and they went, and he ran them and ran with them and ran them and ran with them. And as I understand it from other guys, said when we came back from that, that is when we really basically put our arms around each other. The other thing that we had, I don't know if they have this now, maybe they do, and guys that might be listening that were on the football team, we had what we called the Big Brother program. And each young guy was assigned a big brother. And it wasn't that he was just assigned. We would have a meeting about the personalities of all the young guys that were coming in. This guy is, you know, he's kind of frisky. He's, oh, yeah, you know who he reminds me? He reminds me of Corey Minor. Do you think that'd be a good fit? Yeah. All right, Corey's going to be his big brother. Or he reminds me of Mike Rosenthal. Mike Rosenthal's going to be his big brother. And at the end of the year, the young guys would have to write a paragraph or two. It was actually like a form about their relationship with their big brother. And it became a great source of pride with the older guys that your little brother, so to speak, was succeeding academically, was succeeding on the field. And then we would have a team meeting, and we would pick out the big brother of the year. And the big brother of the year, that was a big, big deal. Mm-hmm. And it would be, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so stand up. Mike, this is what your little brother wrote about you. You are the big brother of the year. Sounding round of applause. I don't know if they got a plaque or whatever it was, but it was a big deal. But what that does, it creates another level of leadership. And the big brothers had some requirements to meet with your little brother at least once a week. When you meet your little brother, you're required initially, the first time you go to the dining room when the season starts, you eat with him. You talk to him. You find out what's going on with him. And not that the older brothers would be, you know, spies, so to speak, but from time to time, an older brother would come in and say, you know, coach, you need to talk to this kid. He is homesick beyond anything that you could possibly imagine. Or, you know, I he's out too late, or he's running around town or something like that. So you had that level of another level of leadership.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting to me because I think you bring up the quarterback last year. You know, I think Deshaun, you know, having the battle that they had, you know, of Zaire versus Kaiser, and that drags into the season. Things don't start well. You have the meltdown at Texas. I mean, it just was kind of a recipe for disaster. And I think the wheels just started to come off. And sometimes when that happens, that's when the finger pointing starts. And you know, this is my guy, and that guy didn't do this. And you know, so I think that it was just kind of a snowball that started rolling downhill, kept picking up steam and getting bigger and bigger.
Mike, a house divided cannot stand. When you have quarterback competition like that, and you know, if I could paraphrase or say something ahead of that, people that are positive in a locker room are going to find each other. People that are negative in a locker room are going to find each other. When you have two quarterbacks, and one of the quarterbacks all of a sudden is the starting quarterback, a certain amount of the positive people are going to rally around him. The people that are maybe negative are going to find that guy that didn't get the position and rally around him. So I've seen that, and it's not new to football. And I think this year with Wimbush being basically going to be the guy, I don't think he'll have that.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think there's out of all the quarterbacks Notre Dame has had in recent memory, I think he is probably the most respected they've had in a very long time. Universally, everybody loves him. He's a committed kid, just a fantastic kid. not, you know, not a gregarious me kid. You know, it's not about him. And I think that that's going to be very, very good for this team. And I think it's what they need. So very excited to watch him. Bob, I also wanted to ask you, and we'll end with this today, mental toughness. You know, when we used to watch Holt's teams, you know, they were mentally tough. When they were playing teams that were better than them, you know, maybe Florida State. Now, it didn't turn out that Florida State was better than them on the field, but when you talk about on paper and draft picks and all this, maybe a Miami in 88, when they played teams like that, they were mentally tough. Since Holtz has left, I've maybe seen two or three mentally tough teams. I think Willingham's first year, that was a team that was really mentally tough. I think that the Jarius year when he got hurt, I think that that was a mentally tough team.
Well, if I tell that story about how Jarius got hurt, I may have to leave town.
Well, someday we're going to have it.
But as I leave town. Yeah, we'll do it at the toll gate.
Yeah, exactly. So we have those two. And I think that really Brian Kelly's first year, especially defense, they were a very mentally tough team. They played very physical football. And I think in 2012, especially on defense, they played very physical, mentally tough, and offensively. When they needed stuff to happen, they could make it happen. What is the recipe for that? Is it culture? Is it the right senior leadership? What is the recipe for that, and how does Notre Dame find it again?
I'll tell you what the recipe is in my heart, Mike. It's Tuesday and Wednesday.
Okay.
I mean, it's Tuesday and Wednesday. Those 2 days, I remember coming off the field on a Wednesday, and I wasn't with my guys. I'm trying to think which player I was with, but we were walking off the field, and he said, thank goodness that's over. And he said, that's what makes Saturday easy.
Yeah.
And Tuesday and Wednesday were, and when a guy went down, we just moved the practice over someplace else. The one thing that I can't place enough emphasis on is strong scout teams. Strong scout teams, the demonstration teams. These were not scout teams that just had to line up in a place to show where the guy would line up. These were all-out scrimmages. And I'm talking nose to nose. And our scout teams were fly around guys. They took great pride in maybe beating the first offense or beating the first defense. But that comes from emphasizing what their role is, identifying them at meetings, scout team player of the week, hitter of the week, rookie of the week. And on Tuesday and Wednesday, it was, I mean, I can't even describe it. Tuesday started it, and Wednesday was an all-out, total football scrimmage, and rep after rep after rep. You know, at practice, we had a guy, he blew a horn, and it went period two, which meant that it was the second of segment, five-minute segment.
Sure.
Okay. And I remember one day I was standing near Kevin Coretta, and the horn blew, and Kevin, and usually it'd be 30 periods of practice, and the horn blew, and Kevin went, period 135.
Yeah.
But what he meant by that was, we're getting after it here. I mean, this is it. So Saturday came along, and it was like nothing new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, we can beat these guys. Look what we just went through for the past couple of days. One time under Davey, there was a group on campus called Leahy's Lads. Not on campus. It was a group of great men called Leahy's Lads.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out to practice. And it was interesting because I saw them walk over toward Coach Davey, and they were talking to Coach Davey. And all of a sudden, they made a U-turn and took off the field. And I was thinking, well, weren't these guys supposed to stay for the whole practice? I'm talking about some guys that, I mean, they played for Coach Frank Leahy. You imagine what that was like. And in later years, I asked one of them, what happened? And he said, well, we got out there, and we were talking to Coach, and he started telling us that he wanted to make this fun for the guys.
Well, yeah.
Okay. And I was like, and he said, fun. And evidently, anyway, the gentleman's deceased. I loved him to death. He looked at him and said, fun? This fun? This is Notre Dame football. Fun? Today's Tuesday, Wednesday. Fun? There's no fun in this. Fun is when you go across the street and you knock somebody down and you run the football into the end zone. That's what fun is, and you win. This should not be fun. And he turned around, they walked out.
Yeah. And I honestly wonder if that may be it. We've talked about, and I've said so many times, look, you get what you emphasize, all right? The reason Notre Dame doesn't run the football well is we watch them in practice. They throw it all the time. That's all they do is throw the ball. And it's like, look, if you want to be good at running the football, you have to run the football in practice. This year, this spring, we saw a change in that. They focused quite a bit more on running the football. So I'm like, okay, well, this should be good. Hopefully that's what they're going to focus on. But I think you're absolutely right that you cannot be a great football team, Bob, unless you play now and again at 100%. And you're dragging guys down. Sure, you're going to get some guys injured. That's just part of football. But is it better to have Jerry Tillery? Let's just say Jerry Tillery. Is it better to have Jerry Tillery as a 75% player and risk or not risk him getting hurt? Or is it better to have Jerry Tillery as a 100% player and you're going to risk him getting hurt, and that would be bad. There's no question about it. But my point is, if you teach him the intensity that he needs to have on Saturday when he has that kind of physical ability that's really off the charts, the guy can bend, he's got all kinds of things, but if you don't practice enough of being physical and this is a war, and you don't go to war in practice, it's hard to go to war on game day. And I'm not saying that's the case, because I'm not at practice every day. I've only get to see a few of them. Few out of, we say, 4 out of 15. So, well, I guess 5 with the spring game. But that's war. And if you don't go to war, it's hard to suddenly become this team that's a great player during wartime.
Mike, I mentioned Tuesday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
You are on Saturday what you were on Tuesday and Wednesday. There's no way to turn it on and turn it off. It's human nature. If you're going at 75% Tuesday and Wednesday, you're going to go at 75% on Saturday. And if you have to risk injury, I hate to say it, but so be it. It's nature. It's the nature of the game. But, and we're closing now. I see a lot of great things happening right now.
Yeah.
I know some people are angry with a 4-8 season. Nobody wanted a 4-8 season.
No.
Okay. Nobody wants guys to flunk out of school. But I think with Brian Kelly right now, the way he's going about business, I think it will send out a message to every aspect of the football program, whether it be academic support, whether it be strength and conditioning, whether it be travel, whether it be nutrition. I think when he does this, I think the message he sends out is, you know what, we got to close ranks here because we can do this.
Yeah.
And again, I would venture to say, I'll bet you won't have one academic impropriety this year.
I hope you're right.
I'll bet you won't have one.
They need to fix that. And I'm hopeful that they have, because if you have issues 3 years in a row, something obviously needs to be fixed. And I'm sure they've been trying to fix that and kind of fill in that hole. I agree with you. I think Brian Kelly has done a lot of great things. And this off season, and as you mentioned, a lot of these guys become your friends, and sometimes your best friends.
Yes.
And it's very hard to fire your best friend.
Yes.
You know his kids. You know his wife. Sometimes you've been there for 30 years. I mean, I've got one guy who's worked for me for 11 years, and he feels like a son to me. He honestly does, just because he's worked for me for so long, done such a great job. So, I can't imagine having somebody working for me for 20, 25 years and having to fire him. It's just, that's tough to do. So I think Brian Kelly has done a lot of good things. I think he's made a lot of good decisions. And it's going to be interesting to see this fall how that all plays out. And we'll talk some more about, what's going to happen here moving forward.
One guy that I just absolutely love, he actually lives near us right here, and I had a chance to meet him, and I'm so happy he landed on his feet. Coach Booker's at Nebraska right now.
Yeah.
And I think he's in one of those analyst positions. Bobby Elliott went there.
Yeah.
Under Bobby Diaco, mm-hmm. on the defensive side. I know Bobby probably wanted to get back on the field. And then they brought along Coach Booker. So there's two good guys there that I'm happy are where they are.
Yeah.
Coach Book's a great guy, great young man.
Yeah, he is. He's a very impressive person. And I think sometimes
doubt.
He was put in a bad situation, you know, especially special teams. I'm not sure that he was given enough opportunity to be successful. And we've talked about that on the show. I mean, you can't be successful at special teams if you don't spend enough time on it.
And I think Brian Pulido he made an immediate impact.
Oh, and I think
immediate,
he will.
And, you know, he's assigned to Chicago now for recruiting.
Uh-huh.
And being, obviously, my love for Chicago, being a Chicago guy, I'm so happy he's in Chicago. I can't stand it. I think he'll do a great job in Chicago.
Yeah, and his personality will fit in very well with
his
those
personality
coaches.
Is contagious.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, Bob, hey, thanks again for coming on, and we're looking forward to next week. And folks, once again, if you want to sign up for Irish Sports Daily, check the front page starting tomorrow. We're going to have a dynamite special. If you're not a member of Irish Sports Daily, check the front page on Tuesday. We're going to have a great special, and hopefully we'll get you aboard, and we'll get a lot of there's going to be a lot of exciting stuff happening. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week on Power Hour.
You've been listening to Power Hour, presented by IrishSportsDaily.com, where you can sign up for a premium subscription. Follow the Fighting Irish throughout the year on Twitter as well at ISD Update. And to listen to archive shows, visit iTunes and search for Notre Dame Power Hour.